What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls. Theories, lore, and vibes. I'm Dallas.
And I'm Cass.
And today, we drinking.
Yeah, we are.
Every episode, we're going to have something different that is fun to drink. And last episode, we had coffee because it was early in the morning. But now, it is in the noon. And we are having wine.
It is in the noon. Yay. I'm so excited.
It's in the noon. I don't know if this is a full circle moment. I'm using a glass that is, I was a gift from a friend, and it says, be weird, be rude, stay alive. And it is actually a quote from my favorite crime podcast, Crime Junkie.
Really?
So hello, Crime Junkie. I am using a glass that is about you on my own podcast.
You're like, let me just about this real quick.
About fairies.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, this is not sponsored. A Crime Junkie is not sponsoring our podcast, unfortunately. Ashley Flowers, if you want to ever be on our show, you just tell me I will make it happen.
Amazing. What's on your shirt?
I'm Ashley Flowers. And I'm Britt. My shirt?
Yeah.
I will show you what's on my shirt.
Yeah, look at this.
Wow.
Says, you do not yield. Yes.
Look at
this stag.
That is beautiful.
And a fireheart.
Yes. So, Ode to Throne of Glass. Yes. Our friend Sarah at Crescent Cat Co. sent me this shirt. I really like it. It's so comfy and cozy, and it's made very well, and I am obsessed with it. And as always, when we get these lovely gifts in the mail, we give you a discount code. So if you would like a matching shirt or any of the other wonderful stuff that she has on her website, goodish15, and it is in our show notes, as always.
Amazing.
Is Thank it you like for a, noticing my shirt.
Is it like a sage green? Is it green?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. It is green. Yeah, like
I was
a
like,
beautiful
I can't tell if
sage
it's
green,
green,
which I think looks good with a brunette.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
No, it's green. Yeah. Green. Thank you. With my little gold necklace, like I was like, oh, that matches really well.
Popping. Little fall colors. Little Christmas
colors.
So
thank you. I get Sarah for our very cute shirt. I'm obsessed with it. I put the cork in this last night.
Dive right in.
Okay. Well, I have this this machine from Pampered Chef. I don't know if anybody knows what that is.
Yeah,
and you
I do
put
know.
It on the top and you press the button. It goes whizz, and it like drills into the cork and then pulls the cork out. It's very fancy. But it, and I just shoved it back in there last night after my glass.
I use a fork
Cheers.
And a knife. I don't have anything fancy. Or I buy twist
off. I'm sorry. How the fuck do you use a fork and a knife to open a bottle of wine?
So you take the butter knife. You
okay.
take the butter knife, you stick it in, okay? You take the fork and you take the prongs and stick it through here, like on the knife, so it's like this, and then you twist it.
That is so stressful. You're going to injure yourself.
well,
I'm
going to
get you
it.
One of the things I have. I'm just going to get you a Pampered Chef. Is anyone, any of our listeners, if you sell Pampered Chef, please DM me so I can buy it through your account. Cass desperately needs literally anything else to open that bottle of wine besides utensils.
It worked.
It's for now? Woo, okay.
Anyways.
Wild. Well, welcome to the Goodish Girls where Cass is fucking insane.
She's here for the vibes.
She's here for the vibes. Welcome to Jackass. Chapter 16 through 23. Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So, as always, guys, this is a spoiler series, so please make sure you've read not only all of Quicksilver, but all of Brimstone and the bonus chapters as well. You can find those bonus chapters on Callie Hart's website. You can find the bonus chapter, The Maze, at the end of your Kindle Unlimited subscription. So if you're reading Quicksilver, scroll all the way to the end and then some more, and then you'll find it. Chapter 16, The Blood. So we will be doing chapter recaps for all of our chapters, and then we're going to go into some plot points of what we think, and obviously theories, lore, and vibes. So, Ceres let out the fucking cat and Alga is out for blood. Ceres used her fashionable garrote belt to tie up a dangerous stranger to a chair and stuffed his mouth with the old hag's velvet gloves. As this stranger accuses Ceres of many crimes, Lorith finally shows up and drops the truth bomb on both of them. Biggest plot point of this is that Guru has never been outside. LOL. Guru has been everywhere in this fucking place because he is a shadow cat and Alga is hilarious.
I was like, this is a lie, because later we find out that he hangs out with Folly all the time on the
roof. Yes, so Guru has been literally everywhere. Guru is a shadow cat. He goes where he wants. So, like, Alga is this old lady who's like, you let out my cat! Ah, Guru! Now he's out and about. He has extra blood. He's going to be howling. Is he going to probably get into some trouble tonight? Yes. Yes, he will. But you know what? Guru deserves a good time. Let Guru live. Yes. So the conversation between Folly and Alga is fucking wild, because we learned that she has literally cut out his tongue before and it really grew back.
They kind of seem like besties.
Yes.
They're like frenemies. Like, if we need Alga in the next book, Folly's going to be the one to go recruit her and get her. He's going to be like
go get Alga. And he's I'll like, go get fuck, her. Fine.
I'm the only person who can don't convince forget Guru.
Yes, probably true. Yes. And also, Ceres, you're ballsy for grabbing those fucking gloves, man. She was so pissed. She was like, are you serious? You come in here, you blow up my fucking library, you let out my fucking cat, you put my gloves in a stranger's mouth. Like, bro. The relationship is not good.
No.
So this stranger obviously is Foley, and he is convinced that Ceres did something to Fisher. Bro is mind blown when he sees these runes on Ceres, dude. He's like, what the fuck? And also, Alga is truly just an old lady. She goes, stupid female. It's sacrilege to ink your skin with those kind of marks. And all I could think of is like an old lady that's like, why would you desecrate your body? Those are forever, don't you know?
If I was your boss, I would never hire you, because you got ink all over your
I would never
skin.
Hire you.
So unprofessional.
You should be ashamed. Your body is a temple. Yeah, a temple that I get to decorate.
Coming from witch. This is coming from a witch. Let's remember
right?
That.
Yes. It's sacrilege. Ridiculous. So, Lorith finally shows up after all this fucking arguing and explains it all, right? Foley is not bound to the court, and nor is he bound to Ceres' queenly commands, which is why he was able to attack her, even though she, like, made a pact that was like, you guys, you can't touch me or my friends. Right. Because a wolf never becomes a leech, and this reminds us that he was part of the Lupo Perilla. And if you would like more backstory on that, and you haven't read the bonus chapters, as I have begged you guys to in every single episode of Quicksilver and Brimstone that I've ever made, please finally follow my advice and read them, because you'll have a lot more backstory on Foley and the other members.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't like that he automatically, like, starts attacking her on being a vampire. And I know he doesn't know. He doesn't know at this point how she became a vampire, right? Mm-hmm. Or, like, her backstory with Kingfisher. But these two had the same fucking siring story. They were, like, the same thing mirrored, essentially. And he's like, how dare you become a vampire? Yes. There's a little more issues with her story and why she needs to be a vampire, but I was like, dude, you would live the same story. Shut your mouth. Calm down.
I don't disagree. I think it's the fact that she is a vampire and she has items that are Kingfisher's. I think that's where he was like, absolutely fucking not. Where did you get that? I think that's where he was like, oh no. But I agree with you. But you know what else he could have done? Hi, how did you get that dagger? My name's Foley. I know Kingfisher.
That looks a lot like my friend Kingfisher's, like my friend Kingfisher's toy. Did my friend Kingfisher share that with you? He doesn't like to share. Did you steal that from him?
Sigh on the hill that the miscommunication trope is the worst. I hate it. And I know that sometimes it's necessary, but good God.
It's not even miscommunication.
I hate it.
It's no communication.
Non-communication trope. It's a new trope.
Yeah.
No. Bro, just ask her.
Yeah.
Hello, Foley. You have tongue right now? Yes? You can speak? Okay. Use your words. Fucking ridiculous. So, a short chapter, but a fun one for sure. Mm-hmm. So, yes, my theory, as I have said in previous episodes, I think Algate has too much going on in this story to not come back in book three and be a solid side character. Yes. If I'm wrong, I will be blown away.
Nah, they need
to be honest.
Chapter 17, The Dark Door. We get a flashback of Kingfisher's childhood. Apparently he likes to play like demons are attacking him. What a weird kid. Anyways, Kingfisher has to save Carrion again from his nasty scorpion demon. I shouldn't be drinking wine this early.
I hope that none of our listeners are annoyed with either one of our laughs because we're fucked.
Anyways, Kingfisher has to save Carrion again from this nasty scorpion demon, and just like Kingfisher did, I set the whole damn world on fire.
You know what was not on my bingo card? A fucking scorpion demon in Zelvarin.
Yeah,
I tell you what, I knew something would come back. I was like, you know, we have Morthill, like we're gonna have something else. I did not think it'd be in Zelvarin, and I did not think it would be a full ass scorpion demon, and scorpion. I love it.
A scorpion. Scorpion. Disgusting.
Because remember, I want to be a scorpion. In here, I'm a scorpion, but in real life, I'm a giant bumblebee.
Okay.
We talked about this, what kind of bugs we would be.
I know. I didn't remember you saying that. I remember you saying you were a bumblebee. I was like, what do you mean you're a scorpion?
I want to be a scorpion. But yes. I am bumblebee. Damn it. So, learning about Josin, demon. This one's pretty long, guys. We have a lot going on in this chapter. I have a lot of thoughts. So, the demons of old weren't spoken of very often anymore, but I still knew of them. I'd spent countless afternoons in my mother's library while the rain hammered at the windows of Kalish, reading the books my mother set out for me. Old legends, tomes on old magics written in old fae, tales of grand heroism and good prevailing over evil, and then stories about the old demons who had once plagued the lands of Yvelia. She had read them to me over and over again, giggling with me as she tucked me to bed, pretending to be one demon or another as she attacked me, when she had been Josin, the king, or the demon of the desert, fractured into his multitude of stinging scorpions. She had pinched me lightly, tickling me, all while demanding, as she always did, and how will you stop me, sweetheart? What will you do to send me scattering into the dark? And what do? You let in the motherfucking light.
Why is this man an encyclopedia of demons and how to stop them?
Because his mom saw everything. She knew that he would be there. She knew this demon would be there and he would fight him. So she was like, I'm gonna get you ready for every fucking demon.
And his dad might be a demon.
I don't think his dad's a demon. I'm positive that he's not.
I
don't know. I don't think he's a demon god. And here's another reason why, okay? Because when Everlane is walking through the castles, book one, and they are bowing and praying to the gods, they do that to all seven of the gods. But why would they do that to a demon god?
Unless they don't know. Or is it a respect thing? They're like, we gotta respect this guy. Just like the god of chaos, they're like,
and change.
Crazy. He'll fuck you up. We'll just gotta respect him. I don't know.
In my heart, I don't think he's a demon god.
All right.
I don't know. I'll find more proof later. Whoever had etched the Alchemarian runes into the floor of the room up ahead had known this would be the only place a beast like Shoshin could seek refuge. Who was this person?
Madra.
I think it had to be an alchemist, right? It's an Alchemarian room.
I mean,
so what alchemist in Zelvarin?
Can anybody etch runes into a floor? It could be an Alchemarian rune, but like, can't anybody just
so
learn
far,
and etch it? If they were so important back then, if there's millions of them.
I don't know.
Hundreds of them.
So far, the only person we have actually seen do it is Fisher, right? In the last chapter when he opens the portal. But is that an Alchemarian rune or is that something different? I don't know. So we don't know who this person is. I don't know. But we know that Fisher had a rough fucking time. We go back to the maze just a little bit, right? And he says, even, he's like, even being eaten by Morthill wasn't as painful as these scorpion stings. And I, when I had read about the maze and when I had read the bonus chapters, I knew that Morthill killed him, right, on many occasions, and he kept coming back to life. I never thought about the fact that he was eaten by him.
Like, in him?
Then yeah.
Didn't he just poop
him out? I never, like, connected that.
Would he just poop him out?
No, he, I don't, he, like, regenerated. It was like the, in my mind, it was like the Groundhog Day.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, he would just wake up the next day and be alive, and then here we are all over again.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And then he would die, and then come back, and then die, and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
For a really long time, right? So, in order to bring the light in to kill the demon, Fisher has to use his shadows to blast through the brick instead of protecting his hand. Because the magic can go two ways. It can protect the hand, or it can blast the brick. So obviously he has to do that. But each time he punched, his magic rippled twice. Why? He says, I watched my shadows roil across the stone, shivering as a second wave came again and again, rolling after my magic and merging with it. It made no sense. My shadow should have been having some effect. The old magic that formed the demon trap should have weakened a little, but it wasn't even reacting. At least not how it should have been. It was almost as though... dot, dot, dot. What the fuck? Why dot, dot, dot? Why? She knew.
I don't know.
When Callie was ready, she knew. She's like, they're gonna be pissed. And I am.
I understand trying to let the light in. But this, at this point, I was like, why the fuck is he still punching this wall? Like, meanwhile, his hand is like mangled and bloody and broken, right? Because he's like, I just gotta punch it yeah, harder. Right? Then I'll just, let me just punch it a little harder. Why keep punching if it's not working? Like, at some point, I was like, all right, Kingfisher, it's not working. Stop doing it. And his hand's like,
do something else. We were on very different wavelengths reading this paragraph. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? Why?
Meanwhile, you were like, oh, bro,
I don't think it's working.
Stop. Stop.
Carl, what happened to his hands?
His hands?
I kind of cut them up.
I cooked them up and I ate them.
Carl
kills people.
So yeah, I was so angry reading this sentence. I was like, although what? Although
dot dot dot.
I don't know.
Never to be answered again.
I don't know, and I'm mad about it. Literally, I don't have an answer for you guys. And this also keeps me up at night. If you're like, if it's like 2 a.m. and you're like, I wonder what Dallas is thinking about. It's this. It's this fucking sentence. It was almost as though all I want for Christmas is to for Callie Hart to finish this fucking sentence.
Oh, gosh.
Ugh.
All right.
So anyways, a voice that belonged to something far, far older, a creature not born, but constructed from the base elements of hell itself. Because why? Because hell is empty and all the devils are here. The dedication. They're right here. Every one of them. Every demon is here. Oh, I loved this chapter. I had a good time. So. The demon is also speaking old Fae, which it should not know. And he's like, I hear them through the walls. And he's like, great. It also speaks common fucking Fae. Awesome. So this demon is like well-versed in education from just listening for all these years, right? So that's super interesting. And then Fisher's blood gets on the runes and he's making them all glow, which is also interesting. So he uses the blood to trace the rune for break. The rune lit up, blazing and white. It sank into the wall, its lines forming deep grooves in the stone. The magic that shielded the wall stretched thin. A veil of shadows shivered over the stonework. Strange, since I hadn't even reached for my magic, and I watched and felt the ward that protected the demon's trap splinter and come apart. This is another reason why I don't think his dad is a demon god. I think that Styx put him there. I think Styx trapped him, and I think that his magic was correlating or, like, meshing with Kingfisher's because they're one and the same.
Maybe.
Like, for like.
I definitely missed that
so
line.
Either...
Like, the veil of shadows that's shivering why I'm here. Over.
That's why I'm here! So, either A, Styx maybe is a demon god, right? And for some reason locked up another demon god? Question mark?
Or...
Or... Styx is not a demon god. He is a regular one of the seven regular gods. I guess we'll call them normal gods. And he trapped them here. Or, third, random off-the-wall theory, Kingfisher has a brother.
We went to
Kingfisher has a sister.
We went to
Yeah, I was like, that's not where I was going, but okay. If it's shadows and they're the same, if it wasn't Styx and it wasn't Fisher who made it, who else has shadow magic? Nobody that we know of, right? Besides the cat, maybe it's Guru. Guru's there. There's three people that have shadows, guys. Styx, Kingfisher, and the cat.
I don't think it was
I think, off the wall theory, just to say that I said it, maybe Kingfisher has a brother.
Maybe.
Or a sister. I have a thought. We'll come back to it, though.
All
right. So, now Kingfisher is fucking hallucinating, right? His mom is there with little Kingfishers all over her dress, and she says something interesting. Now, we know that this is obviously a hallucination, and this is his own inner conscience speaking out through her, right? It's not really her words. She says, "You were the reason your father went away, you know. You were the reason he died."
But he's
is
not
that
dead.
Talking about Styx? Is that talking about Finrin?
It has to be talking about
Finrin. I think there's two men, right? I think there was two men. I think there was a man named Styx that fathered him, sired him, in a way. And then I think there was a man named Finrin who helped try and raise him. Mm-hmm. As I read this book, I, lean more towards that. Mm-hmm. So, also, what kind of fuck in history is with this demon and Fisher? He says, "The secrets I know are more valuable to him than revenge, and I must live if you hope to do the same, at least for now." So I think this demon knows Kingfisher.
For sure. For sure.
Because he's I have stuff that you need to know. Instead of what I mean?
Also, why was it so important in his childhood, that these demons were brought up constantly? I feel like there's always
Mama knew what was going to happen.
Right. But I feel like there's got to be some tie.
Yes.
Why are the demons coming around with him? What do they know?
Right.
Where's the tie?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. So to get the anti-venom, they need regular venom from the demon willingly. Has to be given. So the bargain is drops of venom for both of them and a secret in exchange for Joshin to live, and he has to release him. He says no at first, and Fisher tells Carrion to light it up. Light it up, Danica. Crescent City, if you only get it. Yeah. If you know, you know. So Carrion is like, I literally can't do that. But Fisher's like, no, you got this. Set him on fire. And Fisher suspects that fire is one of Carrion's magics. He just probably doesn't know it yet.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. I thought he was just trying to be like, okay, fine, we'll just kill you then. And then the demon be like, no, please, don't.
That's what not the buttons. Not the gumdrop buttons.
That's how I viewed this.
So the agreement is set. Your life for ours, a secret and a promise that you will not be released and not caught in another demon trap. Fisher then pulls out a little box and puts one scorpion inside it and closes the lid. He then demands the secret that was promised. So the demon let out a cry of frustration, and then it said, "Where there is light, there is always darkness, Shadow Weaver. To kill a queen, you will need to visit the darkest of all places. You will need to strike a deal far more costly than this one if you hope to succeed. And the beast who lies in wait for you there will not be so easy to trick as me. She will eat you whole, Shadow Weaver. She will tear you away. She will tear away your soul and feed on it for decades."
Holy shit.
What the fuck?
Now knowing the ending and rereading this,
I want to hear your thoughts before I tell you mine.
Holy shit. Okay. My thoughts are just now coming to me because I, again, read for the vibes and was just like, yeah, okay, whatever you say. But now knowing the end of this book.
Gotta kill a bitch later, right?
Yeah, and rehearing this, I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
We know that this literally happened. And the part of the book that Ceres is in, when the book
read
ends,
after the trade.
The trade. And he says, you'll need to strike a deal. What's going to happen? Is he going to trade a part
but
of his
also,
soul?
But also, here's where because we're assuming, right? We're assuming right now that he's going to meet with Styx, who is his father.
Right.
And make a trade, right?
Yeah.
But hear the line again. You will need to strike a deal far more costly than this one if you hope to succeed. And the beast who lies in wait for you there will not be so easy to trick as me. She will eat you whole, Shadow Weaver. She will tear away your soul and feed on it for decades.
Right.
Who is she?
The dragon.
If you're meeting with... Is it a dragon? We already left the first female dragon. So who are we actually going to meet?
Did we, though?
Is it not Styx? We met a mother dragon. One of them.
Is it Madra?
And that's, I had originally thought Madra, right? Because it's like to kill a queen. So like, sure, maybe to kill Madra. But I think there's two females. I think there's Madra and I think there's somebody else in the darkest of all places. Maybe Styx is married to a demon goddess.
I'm reading that as, well, with the ending of the book being like, oh yeah, that dragon was waiting there for him and wants to kill him for killing her kid.
Yeah, but she's not going to feed on his soul, right? She's just going to eat him.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it's something that we haven't, I think it's something, a she, that we have not met yet. And yeah, I don't that think sense. That it sticks, that is lying in wait.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think it's another Styx. Demon.
Yeah. I think they need to meet Styx and have this trade mm-hmm. happen, but I don't think Styx is going to be the problem.
Agree. Yes. So the demon lit on fire and mm-hmm. it burned every part of him except for what was in that little box. And that's what happened in that chapter. But here's some things that I noticed as well. Okay. One thing that I have noticed so far that's really interesting is that the words boom, boom, boom have been really repetitive in this book.
Have they?
I don't know if it means anything, to be honest. I just feel it.
Okay. I don't have a theory.
I just was like, that's odd. Because she didn't do that in book one. She didn't do that in book one, but she did that in book two. It was like, boom, boom, boom. Like when the blood core is waiting for her. Boom, boom, right. boom. Right? Like her pounding on the walls. Boom, boom, boom. Right? And it's like Sarah, right? Sarah J. Maas. This is just my guess. I think Sarah's favorite number is 3, right? She has 3 series. A lot of the Crescent City only has 3 books right now. And in ACOTAR, you have 3 books and then a novella. And then there's mm-hmm. 3 sisters. And she uses down, 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 and around, and around, and around. It means something. I don't know what it means yet, but it means something.
But it does.
It means something. I know it. Okay. So another thing that I wanted to talk about, which I kind of had mentioned earlier, is before Joshin was put into the box and set on fire, he says sacrilege, which is also the second time that this word has been used, first of all. Second mm-hmm. thing, it says sacrilege, Joshin roared. I am a god. You cannot. And I wonder if the lost demons or whatever are part of the lost gods, because he claims he's a god. So is he one of the demon gods? Are these the demon gods that we are talking about this whole time?
I don't know.
If he didn't say he was a god, I never would have thought that. But he says it. He's like, I am a god.
Right.
Right? So who is trapping these demon gods in these areas? We know that Mort Hill was trapped in the maze by Malcolm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did maybe Madra? Or again, maybe Styx?
See,
somebody came in and trapped this.
That's why I think Madra. Because if Malcolm could trap a demon god or a demon, right, mm-hmm. in the maze, then
right.
did Madra put him there in the city when she made all these other things happen and there's change within the city?
What did Malcolm also have? An alchemist.
We gotta get rid of this bitch.
Was there ever a time where Madra and Belicom were good with alchemists? Or were they always threatened by them?
Probably always threatened, because they're little bitches. But, like, they had to use them at some point. There were hundreds of them.
Right. So. I need more history on this, right? Yeah,
I agree.
Interesting. I don't know.
I agree.
That was a really fun chapter, though. I had a good time. My mind was doing the math symbols in the sky.
Yeah, I bet it was.
I was typing so fast. I was like, I have so many thoughts.
Gosh.
Chapter 18, Brother. This chapter feels like a literal episode in Days of Our Lives. In this library right now, because Loreth and Foley are about to wade through some rough history with Ceres right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
About this episode, Loreth and Foley are having their reunion, and it's not going well, right? Foley has been hiding in the library, which is why Loreth hasn't found him yet, because he hasn't climbed up 500 stairs, right? He makes one remark to Ceres, and Loreth has him on his fucking ass so fast, it's not even funny. He was like, a-bam! Like, straight over the fucking table, out the window. And I need that in my life.
I love that Loreth is protecting her over Foley, like, immediately. Like, they have this whole, like,
yes. thing
where Foley's like, this girl's bad. She killed my kingfisher. What? I don't trust her. And mm-hmm. Lorth's like, I will protect her over you any day. Fuck you.
Yeah, I will literally fucking kill you, bro. Again. So, yeah. The one thing I didn't see coming, also my bingo card, is I didn't think Lorth would make it on my book boyfriend list.
What?
Like, Kingfisher's number one, right? I liked him in book one. Like, I did not like him. But, like, book two, I see him in a new light. And I'm like, ah, I think he can be in my top five. Top 10. Top five. Top seven.
I've loved Lorth since the beginning.
I loved him
as a side character.
I love Broody Kingfisher. So much.
Well, I love Kingfisher, too.
Now that I know he... Yes. Lorth is now part of our Lupoprilia. So, Foley came to Emmontraeth when his death was taken from him by Tal, and it was safer for everyone around him if he wasn't there. This is where Lorth tells him that they sent him letters for a really long time, right? And he's like, I never got any letters. And we knew Lorth what happened with those letters, but I do want to save that explanation a little bit more for, like, when we get closer to it. But we do mm-hmm. know what happened to those letters and that they actually were sent, because Foley can't lie, right? He's like, we sent you letters, right. Bro. I'm not lying to you.
Yeah.
So, and then Foley's like, well, I also said an oath, so, like, I am also not lying. And Cersei's like, you're literally both telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where the letters are. Cersei is going to literally anywhere else at the moment, but leaves with the book that Algit did not give her. This is one that she did not give her, and it is called Elemental Runes and Their Purposes, A Comprehensive Guide to Alchemy, which should have been book one that Algit gave her, but it wasn't. I don't know what the other book was, but it wasn't this.
Right.
So this is where things get interesting. Foley finally realizes that Cersei is telling the truth, right? The runes are real. The mate part is real. She is an alchemist, and she also has not slept in a really long time. Awkward.
I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, but, like, I just kind of wanted to square up with Foley in this chapter. Like,
yes.
You've been gone for how long? And you say that you
a long time.
Love and trust Kingfisher so much. So when you have somebody else who just as much respects Kingfisher telling you, like, mm-hmm. she's bonded to him, he trusts her, like, they're together, like, this is the thing, you need to trust her, that he's like, I don't fucking believe it. Fuck that bitch. I don't want to work with her. This is where I was like, all right, get over it. Pull it together. I don't know.
Yes.
Even if Kingfisher was there, which we know later on, they have a conversation, and he's still like, I just can't believe. I can't believe you, Kingfisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Agreed. So, alchemists, as we know, need sleep in order to replenish their power. Foley recommends that she enter a trance state to try and quiet her mind. We are then reminded that Foley's grandfather was an alchemist, and there was hope that he would remember the information he learned as a failing. He agrees to help her, but only if she sleeps first, because she is useless before that. And honestly, same. Get some rest, babe.
Honestly, she needs
to. We all need you to sleep.
Because hearing it from anybody else, she has not cared at all. But he's like, I have this important information. If you want it, go sleep. Go get your shit together. I'm not giving it to you unless. Like, anybody else, I feel like, would have caved to her and been like, okay, fine. You can have it still. So she needed Foley to be like, no, for real. You cannot have it. Goodbye.
Yes. Agreed.
Chapter 19. This chapter is a little wild. Kingfisher and Carrion have a bad trip, and then they end up bonding over loving the same girl. And that's it. That's pretty much the whole chapter.
So
bad
cute.
Trip, love the same girl.
So Carrion and Kingfisher are back in Voris Shaw's apartment, and immediately both of them are like, holy shit, this place is trash, and also it smells bad, but also, like, familiar, right? Then Fisher blames it on his hallucinations and thinks that, like, it was like that the whole time, and they need to focus on healing and not the shop around them. However, when I read this, I was like, awkward. That's odd. What do you mean? What do you mean? So I went back. We're going to go back to chapter 15 just for this moment, okay? It says, we were inside the human's shop. It turned out he wasn't just a vault breaker. He was a merchant, too, a purveyor of all kinds of bizarre and interesting goods. There were tiny heads in jars on his shelves, a vast array of powders and crushed herbs in small glass containers, bones strung out in rope and knotted to strange shapes that looked almost like runes. Everything was covered in a fine layer of sand. The air was thick with the smell of unfamiliar but not unpleasant spices. I paid little attention to the details of our surroundings, but on knowing how many entrances the shop had and what where they were, the rest was unimportant. The silver was all that mattered. I'm sorry. You think, Kelly Hart, that you can be like, oh, it doesn't matter. It smells like spices. Everything is organized. Nice jars. And then all of a sudden he's like, and now it's trash and smells like something weird and gross, but also I kind of know what that smell is, but it's not, it doesn't matter. I see you. I see you. And I see these lines. I can't give you an answer on what happened. I can't tell you, but I know that there was a reason that in each chapter it says two different things. And Kingfisher, what the fuck are you doing? You, my friend, pay attention to details more than almost any other fae in these realms. What do you mean?
It doesn't
matter. The details didn't matter. The devil is in the details.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What's happening right now?
It goes Sir? Back to last episode when I was like, there's a crap ton of inconsistencies. And she says they all matter. They're all important. They're there
yes,
for a reason.
Yes, something is happening.
Yeah.
So, anyways, okay, I digress. They all have to work together to find the tools to make the remedy, which we know Fisher learned plant medicines as a failing. Also, Mama Fisher is back as a hallucination, and she's still being super mean. And then Morel shows up, and she's also, mm-hmm. like, being kind of hurtful. And this entire conversation hurt my heart really bad.
Yeah.
And again, Mama says something interesting. You're just like your father, aren't you, darling? Always too late. What does that mean? What does that mean?
I literally wanted to throw up. Hearing this, reading mm-hmm. this line, hearing
yeah.
Morel and his mom just like spew nasty ass things at him. How dare, mm-hmm. How dare that demon? That's all I have to say. How dare that demon?
How dare you, Joshin? How dare that demon? The audacity.
Yeah, disgusting.
Yes, I think that all of these comments from his mom about his dad are mean something.
You know what?
Yes. Fair. So also, dead people are talking to Carrion. And I hope that we get a bonus chapter on who the fuck that person is. They're trying to fight him. He's yelling, stop, no, don't, she's sick, please, 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 don't take it. I can't help her without it. I'll do anything, please, I promise. Who is this? What is happening?
She's sick. Carrion bonus chapter.
Yes.
Anyways.
But we know in the bonus chapter that he fell in love with somebody who was sick. We know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is this like a flashback? Right. That's where his heart, and we find out towards the end of this as well, right? Like, he didn't have room, yep. right?
Correct.
Just imagine. I need you to imagine mm-hmm. for a second. Okay, close your eyes. Okay, close your eyes. You're on a very bad trip, okay? You're high as fuck.
You hate it already.
But not no, only are you high as fuck and unsure of everything around you in the world, but you're in a sandy, dusty, hot place.
Ugh.
To get through it.
Dehydration.
I would kill myself.
Can I open my eyes? No, I don't like it.
You can open your eyes. At one point, Carrion says the same thing where he's like, you know what? If you're not going to save me, kill me. Just do me a favor and kill me. If I was in their shoes, I probably would have offed myself. I would have been like, no, yes. I'm not getting through this. Absolutely.
Yeah, actually,
not.
I'm going to go. Bye. We're good.
That's better than this.
Yeah, no, 100%. So when they're back at Carrion's place, Fisher uses a glass Ceres made. This one looked a whole lot like Madras Castle catching on fire. Carrion would buy all of the ones that Elroy couldn't sell because Ceres made them and they had bad messaging on them. So then the famous line on the internet, pre-Brimstone release, is finally here and it is in. It was Carrion this whole time. So Carrion loves her, but he doesn't at the same time. He loved a human once and it broke him and he has carried that grief with him the whole time. And if you have not read the Target bonus chapter edition, you are doing yourself a disservice because it is gut-wrenching. And that's yeah. all I will say.
Yeah.
So he says, so yes, I loved Ceres Fane. Because she's electric and fierce and loyal, and being around her brings the world back into focus. But I am not in love with her, Fisher. I tried. But my heart was just too full of sorrow to make room for her.
So sad.
God damn it.
I am so
damn
sad.
Damn you, Carrion Swift.
But also, I'm so glad that he finally admits this. Because honestly, mm-hmm. Kingfisher yeah. needs to fucking hear this. And thank God he's not an ass about this.
Agreed.
Carrion and Ceres needed mm-hmm. each other in lots of different ways for a very long time. And Kingfisher was not there, okay? I love him and I love Kingfisher mm-hmm. and Ceres together.
Yes.
But I'm not going to say that this did not make my heart hurt even more for her and Carrion's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like...
But Carrion could not have gave her what she needed, even if he didn't have room in his heart.
I know. I just...
Carrion does deserve happiness.
It makes my heart hurt.
Mm-hmm. I know. Same. So, yeah, it's hard.
Kingfisher's starting to open up
and,
like,
character growth.
Relate to him. And mm-hmm. this is where I started to see, like, their bond start to form. Where they... I mean, Carrion kind of always mm-hmm. was, like, okay, vibing with Kingfisher. But Kingfisher kind of is, like, okay... This guy might be chill. I might like him as a friend.
Yeah, agree. So, chapter 20, Huntsman. Sarish tries to sleep, but ends up in the same dream as Kingfisher, and if you thought they would sit on the couch and catch up, you are dead fucking wrong. Things get hot as fuck in the cottage. Mmm. Dream sex. I loved this. I ate this shit up, dude.
I'm the emoji.
Oh my god. Yes, you're the meme. She's like covering all but one eye. I'm like, binoculars. Let me see. Okay, so Sarris is attempting to clear her mind, right, and sleep. She ends up in a small cottage on a hillside where Fisher stood. This is the Huntsman Cottage, and Fisher's father brought him here when he was young. Finrin or Styx? I don't know. Nah. I don't have the answer for that. We're in a dream. Also, Onyx is in the dream. Someone fucking explain to me how this fox is just a fox and also can just be in your dreams for real? Ridiculous.
Somebody just needs to explain everything, okay? Because how are they in this same dream world? And it's like a dream world, right? Like, they're not there, but they can feel everything. They're together. Like, at one point later in the world...
They call it a dreamscape.
Right. Yes. And I'm in a dream. Okay, this person comes, and then, like, this person takes me out of the dream, and then I show up at this place for real. Like, what do you mean? Are they astral projecting? Is it
the bond? Wild.
It can't be the bond, because she does it later on when Kingfisher's not there. But what the fuck is this shit, Callie Hart?
Do you know pointed how many question? NDAs I would sign to sit down with her and have her just tell me everything?
Right.
I'd sign all the NDAs you want. Forever. A lifelong NDA. Million-year NDA. I'd sign it just so I could sit down with her and have her explain everything.
It doesn't make sense to me. Sorry.
Be wild. So, yes. It's crazy. So, Fisher is gifted another tattoo from Cirrus in the shape of a dagger on his leg. Mm-hmm. Only when she is thinking very bad thoughts, though. As far as Kingfisher says. So, it is finally time for dream sex. And Fisher's broken hand will not stop them from fucking. They're doing it either way. Every time Kingfisher tells Sarah she is a good girl, I want to punch someone right in the fucking mouth. I get so excited. I'm like, yes, tell her! And then he doses her on the inner thigh before he drinks to heal himself. Side note. If your man is not telling you watching you come is a fucking gift, then he needs to start. Advice to all men out there, if you're not saying this to your girl, be better. Fisher makes Sarah's food afterwards, and I need all partners to know this is top tier book boyfriend material. I want to not feel my legs when we're done. I want to be called a good girl, and I want a fucking snack afterwards.
Girl!
Hell yes. Next, after dream sex. They talk about falling asleep within a dream, right? Because they're tired. But, quote, to fall asleep within a dream is to commune with the gods. And they don't try to find out if this is still true.
I think that
will come up later in book three. I think book three, they're going to need to talk to the gods once more. They're going to be like, okay, well, we can go to sleep within a dream. Let's do that and see if we can communicate with them. I think that will come back.
I agree.
Also, then we flop back. To, like, when Foley is mentioned, his teeth are brought up. His canines are plated with gold, which we learn is a sign of a shunned vampire. Normally, those who have their teeth removed die in the field, but Malcolm let Tal keep Foley as a pet and or a bargaining piece.
When you said bargaining piece, I was like, okay.
Against Kingfisher when he was in the maze.
Right, I know. Yeah, but then they never used him. Which is interesting to me, because I feel like Malcolm always likes to jump right into the shit that he has. He likes to show his cards. He's like, I got this.
That's true, he does. He's one of those evil guys that's like, look at everything I have. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. I don't know why he didn't use Foley. That's a good question.
But you know what? Good for Foley to sticking to his true beliefs, even while he still lives in Sansara.
So, then, we get a hot-ass piece of gossip, right? Benfis hates Tal because Tal was supposed to be married to Everlane. On the night before the wedding, Tal fled and left Everlane and the Winter Palace, kneeling at the throne of Sanisroth. Why? Because of his love for Zovina, which we have mentioned in previous episodes, but this is where we, like, truly find out. Like, he left Everlane for Zovina, and I need to know Everlane's thoughts on this. Once I know Everlane's thoughts, it will tell me an entirely different picture. Is she cool with it and is like, I really didn't want to marry him anyways? Or is she like, oh no, my one true love left me for another woman? You like, what does Everlane think? God damn it, that's wake fair. Up.
And listen, I like I said in the last episode, I understand why Ren is mad, okay? He's like, how dare Tal decide to do this, mm-hmm. right? But he should literally be thankful that Tal was like, no, I'm in love with this other person. I'm not going to let Everlane be married to me and have this terrible marriage. Okay, now he can have Everlane, I mean, if she wants him, and Tal gets to stay in his own fucking lane. And he pretty much does, right, when it comes to, like,
you know what
relations
I think?
With Everlane and the girls, at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think that Ren thinks that he's not good enough for Everlane.
I can see that. But also, does Everlane want him? Because how long have they been kind of, like, in this thing together?
We don't know.
Since Tal's been gone, she probably had plenty of chances to be like, Ren, I love you. Why hasn't she? Does she not love him?
Yeah.
Did she love Tal?
But
I don't know.
If we're, are we rolling on the roller coaster that Everlane is actually going to be a villain? Is she smarter than people are giving her credit for? If we are, why would she give herself to Renfis if she had other plans?
Right. If she is a villain,
did she keep him just close enough?
To know things, to know everything, to be able to use it against them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yes.
So.
Wild. That's the end of chapter 20.
Theories? We kind of talked about it already, though. But, like, book three.
Yeah, I think I said most of mine already. Like, there's a couple of different things that I have for book three. I think they're definitely going to go to sleep and then sleep again within their sleep to talk to the gods. It seems like a pretty fucking open door right there.
Right. I kind of wish they would have in this book, because when Ceres gets sent back, right, she's supposed to be, like, out of the gods' tapestry. Like, they're not supposed to be able to help or intervene or control her and Kingfisher anymore. So what would happen if they were like, hey, we're back? I don't know. But they would have... struck a new deal. Could they even do that?
Want to stay forever?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Chapter 21, Dianthus. This one's a pretty short recap, but Kingfisher was a pirate. Carrion was a princeling. That's it. That's it.
So, first thing, are we going to sleep past the first fucking paragraph in this chapter? Fisher used to hang out with pirates named Jack and Prost and punched him in the face and broke his entire hand before Gilthry.
Kingfisher was a pirate.
When are the pirates going to show up? I don't know if he was a pirate. I don't know. I don't know if he was a pirate. I didn't say he was a pirate. He said he used to hang out with pirates. I mean, yeah, I think he could have fucks had maybe like a little pirate phase. Like an emo phase. Just a phase, Mom.
Shiver me timbers. Okay.
Arr, you're not my real dad. Oh my god, we're the fucking worst.
We're idiots. I'm crying.
Out of the dream, the tattoo was still on Fisher and he smelled like Ceres, but he was fully healed. Like, once he wakes up, he's done. He's healed, ready to go.
It still doesn't make sense to me. The whole dreamscape thing, but then it's not a dream at the same time. Like, I think it's just a little too far out there. I don't know how she's going to wrap this back in or, like, explain it. It feels a little out there to me.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Other than the fact that Kingfisher is a god, or a half god at least, right? He has extra powers. Maybe he brought Ceres into that dream.
But still, I don't know. It kind of, it feels like it's like a whole different dimension.
Just let them
like,
have their dream sex, Cass. Well, we all want this for them.
I'm honestly not so focused on the dream sex part.
It's like the middle.
I'm focused on like later in the book when she literally uses it again. And then all of a sudden she shows
that's
up
true.
In a different place.
We will get
place.
Into that.
Weird. Doesn't make sense to me. Anyways.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think everybody gets to have the dream sex. I think only these guys. Ish. I don't want to go in that too much today because I have other chapters and I have more thoughts.
Yes.
But either way, in the apartment of Carrion, there's a drawing of a woman who was Amelia DeAnthus, and it reminded Fisher of what happened to Carrion's mom. Bellicon found her in a bathhouse and carried Ruik DeAnthus' sword, Bitterbane, in his hands, all bloody. And again, I still question, like, the sword and the rules of the sword, because was Ruik dead? Was he carrying it? It doesn't say if he was wearing gloves or not. It doesn't tell us.
If he was carrying it at that point,
I just am not sure.
I feel like Ruik has to be dead. At that point,
and it was bloody, he was
probably already dead.
Him.
Right. I think he was already dead.
Right.
Yeah.
And then where is Bitterbane now? Where is this god sword?
Bellicon probably still
Why was
it.
Bellicon so focused on having Solace if it still had Bitterbane?
He probably wants to collect them. Bellicon has a lot of power that we don't understand, so I feel like he likes to collect these things, and he probably uses them all in different ways. Yeah. Like Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, Carrion this whole time was trying to remember Yvelia and his home and the banner of DeAnthus.
That's it. He was a princeling.
Again, the godsword thing is really, throwing me off.
Was Kingfisher a pirate? Yes. Was Carrion a princeling?
Maybe.
Yes. Both? Yes. In some way.
And we will bleed whatever color Carrion tells us to bleed. Hehe. Yes. Chapter 22. Stargazer. Lorth teaches Ceres how to fight with common household cleaning items. Ceres attempts to rain on Foley's pity party the best she can, and a Stargazer tries really hard to get a message to her the only way it knows how. Violence. Ceres asks Lorth how attached Fisher is to Solace, which again was his father's sword.
Mm-hmm.
So Ceres is going to have a chat with the sword and see what she can change it into to be so, like, more manageable, more handleable. And mm-hmm. I love that it was like, I can handle this sword just fine. I'm so tall, but, like, the sword is, like, 3/4 of my fucking length.
Uh-huh.
So I get it. I'm here for it. So
yeah.
We learn more about the Stargazers and how they're, like, pure and trusting. They have no concept of right and wrong, and when they're compelled to do something, they follow. They can steal people's hair for nesting, but if somebody compelled it to, they can bring it back to whoever is using it for no good, mostly with witchcraft. I do have a question, though, because, like, it is like, okay, with, right? I'm saying I think her and Adina were friends or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, because the Stargazer is in the library, right? And we know that when it goes after Ceres, as soon as it leaves the library, it dies. So how is it supposed to steal somebody's hair and take it back to somebody else?
Because it's not leaving the library. It's going to Algot. She's the only witch.
I mean, maybe. That's really interesting. So Ceres' runes are glowing and burning again. And Foley points out a very special rune, an arrow bisecting a circle, one of the most important symbols for an alchemist, the rune for Quicksilver.
Thank God for Foley. If he was not there, none of them would have any idea what the fuck is going on with her or what's important at all.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, wow, look at those fancy things on your hand. They'd be like, that's a new tattoo. And she'd be like, yeah, I don't know what it does.
I don't know. Yeah, no, 100% Foley is a very big help, right?
Yeah.
Because then we also learn about Alchemarin's shield. Once Ceres masters the art of using her Quicksilver rune, she can then seal the rune. She's not ready, though, even though she thinks that she is, because each time she uses it, she doesn't have a relationship with the Quicksilver. She ultimately violates it. So she has to, like, stop bargaining with it.
Right.
So we also get a quick but important comment from Foley. You cannot eradicate magic from a city. Once it takes root within a community, it never leaves. And then he says, quote, that is not just a circle. That is the foundation of all powerful sigils and runes. The strongest magic is circular, like a wheel. It is the symbol of forever, the beginning and the end of everything. It carries magic on a loop, amplifying it, giving it strength. This is the most important magical signal symbol there is.
God fucking damn Nadra.
Yeah. I think that this is the sole reason that Callie Hart did not give us a map of Zilvaren. We have asked her, and people have asked her, about whether or not there'll be a map, and I think this is why she didn't give it to us, because I think it would have pointed it out immediately if we saw it on paper.
Yeah. I think it's going to be in the next book, though. I think she's going to give us a map in the next book, and I cannot wait to see how it is all, drawn up. Because in my brain, I can kind of picture it, but, like, with the walls and the things of how it all works, I really, I really hope she makes one.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I do, too. So, then Ceres is shown a book, Unorthodox Tria Prima, the basis of which is always the same, salt, quicksilver, brimstone. The uses for all three are varied and wide, and combined, they, first of all, what do they make when you combine quicksilver, salt, and brimstone? So, you have quicksilver, which is book one. You have brimstone, which is book two. We have salt as a third ingredient. But salt is not a good name for a book. But you know what salt is also named as? Halite.
It would be a good book name. But I remember you writing in here somewhere in the notes, you were like, book three, salt. And I said, shut the fuck up. It's named salt. I'm not reading it.
No, I think it's halite. I don't think it's amino sodium chloride.
NaCl. That's the book.
Yes. So, anyways, stargazer straight up attacked Ceres multiple times and then died as soon as it left the library door. Instead of unfolding it and looking at it, which honestly, fair, I probably wouldn't have dissected it either, she puts it in her pocket.
Yeah, this is where I missed that she should probably open the paper bird. But I also, I just need to point out.
Yeah.
I almost cried over this thing dying. Like, when it was like, it dropped to the floor. Yeah, sad. I was like, oh my god, she killed it. What the fuck? Sad.
It died on its own.
It wasn't even doing anything, and she killed it.
Oh, it died on its own. So, the stargazers, since they all end up being the book Ceres needed, are they all gone? Can they be conjured once again? Is my question.
I have the understanding that they are gone. Because Adina took her book, put the magic into it to create the birds, like, to reproduce, waiting for her there. That now that she has the book.
Did all of its babies die too?
It's all gone. When they all drop, right, and she puts the book together, I also read it, and I think she said, like, all the pages drop, and she puts all the pages together. Like, I think they're all gone.
Okay, so we just have to assume they're gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're probably right. Damn it. So, when Foley mentions witchcraft, is he saying they are made from witches? Or where do they actually come from? Foley mentions that witchcraft, again, can make these starbirds and make them do things that they shouldn't, right? So, we know that Alget is a witch. Is she one that could make them do something that they're not supposed to? Or is Adina not only an oracle, but also a witch?
That I can feel like. I feel like Adina is definitely more than what we know. All right. Chapter 23, Your Mistake. They finally find the Hayden Fane, and Kingfisher instantly regrets it. It's like having Donkey along for the ride in Shrek. Also, Madra is just out here making cartoons for her kingdom, and the people be believing her. Sounds like Stockholm Syndrome to me. That's the chapter.
I mean, all the ones who are wearing the plague bags are like, look at this drawing my queen made for me. This is so nice.
Even the ones that didn't, cough, cough, Hayden, cough, cough, Third Ward, they're like, Madra drew this cartoon and posted it on the wall, and it's the truth.
It's real.
Can't stand it.
I still am skeptical. We never talk to Madra in this book. We never see Madra in this book. We don't fuck it. We literally just assume that everything they're saying is correct.
Is Madra even I'm hesitant. Alive?
Right. I don't know.
I don't know.
They find Hayden Fane, finally. He is alive and well, and immediately hates Fisher and calls him out by name, King Fisher of the Agent Gate.
Shut the fuck up.
He's like, isn't that you? Immediately shut the fuck up.
Immediately, no.
The guardians are handing out papers with their faces on it saying the Butchers of Zilvarin. Did this remind anybody else of the movie Tangled where they're like, they didn't even get my nose right?
No, but when I read that, I was like, that's kind of funny though. That's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny.
Yeah.
His name's not Kingfisher. It's actually Flynn Rider.
Or it's like when Flynn Rider's like, that's not my real name. My real name's Eugene. And Kingfisher's like, that's not my real name. My real name's Kaden.
It's actually Eugene.
Aiden also says that Fisher killed Saris right before she was about to be parted. He slit her throat and they dragged her body through the third and showed everyone.
Questions, okay.
Yes, I have questions. What is your question?
One, did nobody see the face on the body? How do they know that it was her? Was the face bashed in? Also, was it another girl's body?
It was
body?
A drawing.
No. He says they slit her throat and they dragged her body through the third and showed everybody. A body, right? This is not the cartoon. This is like a legit body that they dragged around.
I see.
So whose face was it? Was it hers that they somehow glamored to make it look like her?
Face.
Was it? That's what probably I'm thinking.
Black hair. Thin girl, black hair.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Or did they glamour it? Because obviously she has some kind of magic. There's some kind of magic in Zilvaren. Did they glamour some random body? I don't know.
Right. But then my question is, what is the point? Why dress up Saris? Is it to show Kingfisher? But, like, Madryn knows that Kingfisher and Saris are together. Like, she knows. Like, he knows that she doesn't have her. So what is the point of purposely dragging Saris Fane through the third? Why is that the choice?
I mean, no one waiting for her,
right? Besides Hayden and Elroy.
Right, but she was a part of Elroy's business. And I guarantee you, with Elroy working with all the silver and the shit that he's done over the years, if she's trying to put it out there, and then everybody that's ever worked with her within the business, because later on, when Hayden tells her what happened, she's like, and they just believed it? Like, they truly believed I would go against everything I believe in and follow this queen?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he's like, yeah.
It just seems like a weird move. Well, Hayden's an idiot, so...
But still,
I don't know.
The whole third's upset.
So they also killed children and paraded them about the city as well, blaming it all on Fisher. However, Hayden, again, didn't see a lot of this stuff. It was just drawings. And he says that too. And Fisher's hold up.
Yes,
bro.
This part.
The same queen who is literally killing you guys slowly via dehydration draws you a photo and you're all in.
Huh.
You're like, bet.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
She's like
the
posting
fuck are you willing
the
to Saris.
Yeah, she's like posting the Sunday cartoons to the paper. She's like, and here's another cartoon of what's happening, and they're all like, oh my god.
And they're like, oh my god, I'm seeing it in real time. It's the lack of water. They're not there.
I guess. Yeah. I personally wanted to throw hands with Hayden. He is so stupid. And I know it's not his fault because, like, Saris shielded him a lot. So, like, he literally has zero common sense with anything. But this tiny, 18-year-old boy is there, like, in
21.
This... 21. Okay, whatever. He acts like an 18-year-old. 16, he's a grown actually. Man. He acts like baby. This baby man is standing there staring this, like, I know he's glamored, but, like, 7-foot, like, fey warrior over, like, in the face. And he's like... You did this over something he didn't see with his own eyes. What an idiot. Mm-hmm. He's like asking to get killed.
Literally.
Like, what if it was true?
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's like, eh.
And Kingfisher's just like, slits his throat.
Done. Bye, Hayden. That'd be wild. But either way, instead of leaving right away, they have to go back to the third so Carrion can say bye to Gracia. This was a pivotal moment for the relationship between Carrion and Fisher.
Carrion literally has nobody. I mean, he has, like, his friends now. But, like, he has nobody that has been, like, his family forever.
Mm-hmm.
He has nobody. And his real parents are dead.
Forces him into a hug.
He feels so bad for him. He's like, it's okay.
And he's like, get off. And he's like, fine, it's gonna go tighter.
He's like, I'm just gonna hold you till you get done crying.
So wild. Yeah, it's really sad. And I feel like Carrion's story is just growing and growing. Such a good side character. Mm-hmm. So the Quicksilver is speaking to Fisher once again, almost childlike, it says. It is happy when they are traveling in the direction that it wants them to go, and then mad when they change course. When the Guardians are chasing them through the streets, the Quicksilver wants them to go towards the Guardians. Finally, the Quicksilver eventually gets its way, and Kingfisher turned in the other direction. And so it's like, yay, go that way. And also,
it's noted, like, and this is kind of backtracking a little bit to, like, with the flyers and stuff, it's noted that there is now a reward for the person or people who report Karen and Kingfisher, and they get a year's supply of water. So they get, like, 2 glasses of water, basically.
She's like, you can have one water bottle. You can have a pint of water.
And they're like, bet, I'm going to gut somebody for that. So as they're running in the way that the Quicksilver wants them to go, they pass by guardians who are gathering girls for cleansing day. And bro flips a fucking switch.
Can you imagine seeing that, though? Can you imagine? It's like Handmaiden's Tale. It's like you're just walking through the street, mm-hmm. and then you see all these young girls lined up, and the guards are just, like, have them against the wall, and they're just, like, marking their bodies.
And Kingfisher was wild. Like, absolutely not.
I can't imagine.
Yes. Yeah, it was insane. So after all the carnage is over, they follow Hayden in a direction he thought was safe, and in, again, the Quicksilver's direction that it wants him to go as well. This is mm-hmm. when Fisher noticed that the time where he should have been out of magic, he wasn't, right? Because mm-hmm. supposedly he should only have a little bit. He had plenty of it, even after using it on all of those guardians. So he encompassed all of Silvarin in darkness. Poof. Everybody's in shadows. For the first time ever, everybody is in the nighttime.
But I want to know, how did it replenish in a place where his magic shouldn't work? Is it a glitch in the system? In whatever kind of spell work the city is? How does, because mm-hmm. right, he should only have a teensy bit of his magic to use the entire time they're there. And he's used his magic quite a bit already. So how right. did it replenish is my question.
Because if you're looking at towards the end of the book, right, uh-huh. it says, because you, Silvarin is in a big circle. It is a wheel of magic. So in Kingfisher's right. mind, there's no magic in this land. All the magic dried up, but it never did. It always has been magic. But they killed right. all the alchemists, who are like the magic users, and the ones who are there are in hiding. So I think it was a lot of assumption, right? I'm assuming I can't use okay. my magic. I'm assuming that it will need replenishing. I'm assuming that I won't have a connection because I'm not in Yvelia. I'm in Silvarin. And then he was like, hold on. I should not have this magic. I just used everything that I had, and I'm still full to the brim, basically. Right. Because he's gathering it from the ground, because the magic never left the city, ever.
Okay. Well, that's what I was wondering, because, right, later on we find that out, and Silvarin is basically some spellwork magic system. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I think with mm-hmm. how it was explained, I was like,
right.
is that a different kind of magic, or that Silvarin's a different kind of magic still? And it's a glitch in the system somehow that he can replenish his own magic there. But I see what you're saying.
I don't think so.
It's just probably assumptions. I would think so
if towards the end of the book they weren't like, yeah. If at the end they weren't like, mm-hmm. oh shit, the circle. The city is literally a circle. Right. The circle is the strongest magic. Yeah. If we didn't get to that in the end, I would be like, that's sus. But because they did, I was like, ah, yes, got it. Everyone gotcha. Has their magic there. They just don't know it.
Mm. That makes sense.
So that, yeah, that was interesting. And that's what we have for this chapter and this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a pretty good one. We had a lot of stuff. What was your favorite quote?
So it's right after they get done with the demon and Carrion. Like I said, close your eyes. Now imagine you're on a bad trip and you're in a dusty, nasty, hot place to get through it. And Carrion says, mm-hmm. hate to be a bother. Carrion wheezed. But if you're not in a position to save me right now, then could you possibly kill me instead? Because this really sucks. And I think that, I don't know, it just made me laugh out loud. I was like, yeah, I'd also want to die too.
Yes.
I think what makes it so good, though, is like Anthony Palmini's voice. Like, if he wouldn't have done it that well, I probably wouldn't have actually laughed. Yeah, it was so well done.
Mm-hmm.
Good line.
He does everything. Him and Stella, like, I want them both to receive awards. I don't give a shit what anybody says. I don't hear anybody say anything bad. But either way, they deserve awards.
That's fair.
Okay, so I always pick a couple options and then I, like, choose from one of them. So there's two that I really like, okay?
Okay.
So there's one, and it's from Carrion, and it says, do you ever wake up sometimes and think, God, wouldn't it be nice if I hadn't just gone toe-to-toe with a scorpion demon from hell?
He has just so many good, like, one-liners.
Oh, yes. 100%. Oh, there's so many that I like. Okay, all right. And then this is another one. And this is, I think, really important for the growth of Carrion. And this is why I'm going to add two to this episode. And it says, it's very simple, Fisher. If you treat me like I'm the court jester, I'll be the court jester. If I'm the laughingstock or the drunk or the idiot, then you're not thinking about who I really am, are you? I survived here for over 1,000 years. Do you really think I'd be able to do all that if I couldn't pull myself out of a fucking hole? If at any point you underestimate me, he smirked, arching a dark copper eyebrow, then I'd say that was your mistake rather than mine, wouldn't you? So good. So good. So, yes, thank you guys for joining us on our third episode with our Brimstone coverage. We are having the best time ever. If you had fun, make sure to join us next week. But also, please make sure to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel so that way others can see our show and enjoy this as well. And again, I'm Dallas.
And I'm Cass.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase